It is again with great pleasure that we're continuing in this study of the book of Proverbs. We're still in the 14th chapter of Proverbs, and in our last lesson we've gotten into the 18th verse. So we'd like to continue that 18th verse. The 18th verse reads like this: "The simple inherit folly, but the prudent are crowned with knowledge." And what that proverb is really saying is that the simple are those who are lacking in judgment and understanding. They act in a foolish way. Their priorities are wrong. Things which should be of great value, they don't have any interest in. This would be knowing and doing God's will. They're willingly ignorant of God's will. They lack knowledge, which is the state of knowing. And they treat this vile and needed possession as though it had no value. Even if they're exposed to this information about God and how it applies to them, they regard it as something which has no meaning. As a result, they inherit folly. And the word for folly here means destruction or trouble. Now, these are not the usual trials of life to test us, which we all have, but these are trials brought about as a result of sin. God promises no help for these trials as long as the sins are unforgiven. We all have trials, but God promises to give relief to the faithful, those who do not treat His knowledge lightly, and those who obey His commandments. God will give relief to them. And in Hebrews 13:5-6, He makes that promise quite clear. He says, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have, for He has said, I will never leave thee, nor forsake thee, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me." But here we're told that those who disregard His word are going to inherit destruction, are going to inherit trouble. The word inherit means they're going to be made to possess this trouble. No promise to help them bear it or to remove it from them, just a promise to make them possess it. But the prudent, and the word means to be sensible or careful, the prudent shall be crowned with knowledge. This means they will be in a state of knowing, they will be aware of God's will, and this will enable them to change their life, be pleasing to God, get forgiveness of sins, and have God to give relief in time of trouble instead of being made to possess trouble. This valuable and so much needed knowledge of God's will is promised to be as a crown on them. A crown is something very valuable and symbolic of power and authority. A crown symbolizes a state of being. When something is received as a crown, it is very precious and greatly to be desired. 2 Timothy 4, 7-8, "I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them that love His appearing." James 1:12, "Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love Him." So this knowledge, which the sensible or careful people of God have, is given like the crown of righteousness is to be given when Christ comes again. It is given like life is given to them that love the Lord. So let us be among those who have a true appreciation for God's will, those who are careful and sensible. Let us not be like the simple who do not have knowledge or understanding. So we don't want to inherit folly. We want to be among the knowledgeable. Let's appreciate the Word of God, and let's learn from it and apply its great teachings to our lives. So again, verse 18 says, "The simple inherit folly, but the prudent are crowned with knowledge." Next proverb, verse 19, "The evil bow before the good, and the wicked at the gates of the righteous." In general, what this proverb is saying is the good will overcome evil. Never is it acceptable for a godly person to commit an evil act. 1 Corinthians 5:15, "See that none render evil for evil unto any man, but ever follow that which is good, both among yourselves and to all men." Romans 13:17-21, "Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if an enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good." Again, Romans 12:9, let love be without dissimulation, abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. Galatians 6:10, as we therefore have opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. So our proverb says, evil will bow before the good. The good way is always superior to the evil way, and it will eventually win out over the evil. We should always want to follow the good way, and we should never want to follow the evil way, but it's hard to convince the world of this truth. Unfortunately, many times it's hard to convince even Christians of this truth. But when one looks at the total picture of this world, we can see that all evil is temporary. The good will win, the evil will be destroyed. Our proverb says, and the wicked will bow at the gates of the righteous. Besides the blessings given to the righteous here on earth, there will be those heavenly blessings which the wicked can only bow down before the gates of, but never attain. In Revelation 3:9, speaking to the church in Philadelphia, behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before thy feet, and to know that I have loved thee. God will bless the good. That's the essence of this whole thing. Evil is never going to be blessed, but God will bless the good. 3 John 11, beloved, follow that not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. 1 Peter 3:11-13, let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. And who is he that will harm you if you be followers of that which is good? In general, even the laws of the land appreciate what is good. Romans 13:3, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. So even in the laws of the land, those who do good are not generally the ones who have to worry about the police. They have to worry about doing something that they're going to have to pay a price for. It's the evil who have to worry about the police, not the good. But as we think about the benefit of good over evil, the ultimate benefit of good over evil will be shown on the judgment day. We're not going to see it in this life. We're going to see it at the judgment day. In 2 Corinthians 5:10, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body, according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. There's where the good is going to triumph. There's where the righteous are going to be told to enter into the joys of thy Lord, thy good and faithful servant. There's where the wicked are going to be banished from the presence of God. So let's read again, verse 19. The evil bow before the good, and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. Next proverb, verse 20. The poor is hated even of his own neighbor, but the rich hath many friends. Verse 20 in NIV says, the poor are shunned even by their neighbors, but the rich have many friends. This proverb is giving a sad but true picture of human nature. This situation is not something God approves of, but it nevertheless is true. One of the unfortunate facts of life is that the world tends to judge you by your wealth rather than by your character. Those who are poor have not only their poverty as an obstacle to satisfying their needs, but they also have a stigma placed upon them that causes them to be treated as undesirables, whether they deserve it or not. This is done even by their neighbors, the very ones who are in a position to give them help and comfort, whereas the rich have all kinds of favors and attention paid to them because of their wealth and the benefits others want to obtain from that wealth. Our proverb says, but the rich hath many friends. Their money causes them to have influence and power due to the greed of their fellows. Their friends simply want to get something from them. Many times this is as much a disadvantage to the rich as a shun is to the poor, because the rich have a hard time telling who their true friends are. A person who seems to be a good friend may be a true hypocrite, out for his or her own personal advantage. When most friendship is governed by self-interest, which is no friendship at all, this is a real disadvantage to those who seek true friendship. The rich person really has a hard time knowing who true friends are many times. So if life is simply a power struggle in which true friendship does not matter, then the rich have the advantage. However, God does not want the rich to use his riches this way, nor does he want the poor to be treated in this way. Proverbs 22:16, he that oppresseth the poor to increase his riches, and he that giveth to the rich shall surely come to want. That's the way that God has promised is going to lead you to poverty. It's not a way to riches. Proverbs 23:4, labor not to be rich, cease from thine own wisdom. Proverbs 31:20, speaking of the virtuous woman, she stretcheth out her hand to the poor, yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. James 2:5-6, hearken, my beloved brethren, hath not God chosen the poor of this world, rich in faith, and heirs of the kingdom which he hath promised to them that love him? But ye have despised the poor. Do not rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats? James 1:9-10, let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted, but the rich in that he is made low, because as the flower of the grass he shall pass away. Again, 1 Timothy 6:9-10, but they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So we're having this proverb, a contrast between the rich and the poor. He says, the poor is hated even of his own neighbor, but the rich hath many friends. And this is not the way God wants it to be. God does not approve of this situation, but it is certainly the way of the world. Verse 21, he that despiseth his neighbor sinneth, but he that hath mercy on the poor, happy is he. This proverb tells how our character and condition are shown by our conduct toward our neighbor. It is teaching similar to what we find in the previous proverb. The word neighbor means an associate, more or less close. In other words, our neighbor is anyone with whom we have to do. To despise means to have disrespect for, that is, to have a lack of high regard for someone. So to fail to have a high regard for any associate is a sin. This may be a difficult action to take, but the Bible teaches it. If we cannot respect someone, we should not continue to have them as an associate. Our proverb also says, but he that hath mercy on the poor, happy is he. He that is kind to the poor will be blessed. Rather than despise the poor, we're to be kind to them. This means our actions toward them will be helpful to them as well as our supply their needs. Matthew 25:31-40, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on the right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungered, and he gave me meat. I was thirsty, and he gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in, naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? Or when saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we sick and or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer, saying to them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me. So we see here quite clearly what our action is to be to our neighbor. Whenever the neighbor is in a time of any kind of distress or need, we should come to their aid, give them assistance, because Jesus said it's the same as doing it to me. So let's read the proverb again. Verse 21, he that despiseth his neighbor sinneth, but he that hath mercy on the poor, happy is he. Verse 22, our next proverb, do they not err that devise evil, but mercy and truth shall be to them that devise good. NIV reads it this way, do not those who plot evil go astray, but those who plan what is good find love and faithfulness. It is well understood that those who do evil err. But what about those who devise evil? That is, they use skill in producing the evil. They think up new ways of doing evil. does the devising of evil, that is the committing of evil by unique ways, does that make it any better? According to this proverb, they still err. This method of sinning is no better than the clumsy old-fashioned sin. Sin is never better nor good. They may think that by sinning with skillful, crafty means that they come off better with their sins. To sin with more intrigue and with more plot than usual is still a sin. This can be the worst kind of sin because it was deliberately planned and premeditated. It is still sin. God's justice cannot be outwitted by clever devices. Those who devise evil against their neighbors greatly err. This sin will actually turn against them and end in their own ruin. This is a fatal error. But how wise is it to not only do good, but to devise good? That is, to use their skill in producing ways to do good. To not only do good as you have opportunity, but to make opportunity. The Bible says they will have mercy and truth. They will be forgiven of their sins. That's mercy. God will be good to them. That's also mercy. And they will have truth. We must have the truth in order to know how to do good. Those who do good will be established in that which is accordance with all reality, the truth. The truth is what will make us free. The truth tells us how to be pleasing to God to save our souls. So not only do good, but devise good. So let's read our proverb one more time. Do they not err that devise evil? But mercy and truth shall be to them that devise good. Our next proverb, verse 23. In all labor there is profit, but the talk of the lips tendeth only to penury. NIV says, all hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. This proverb states a very basic but simple truth. In all labor there is profit. Working will increase one's possessions. To be engaged in some worthwhile endeavor will bring some good results. Industrious people are generally the ones who thrive. It's a mistake for a nation to unduly penalize those who work and make a profit. Individuals, families, and nations prosper as a result of good, honest, hard work. This includes labor of the hands and labor of the mind. When something is done, something is produced. The general principle is that it is good to stay busy, to be active. What our hands find to do, we should do with appropriate energy and interest. This is what brings us profit. But on the other hand, talk by itself leads to poverty. There is no promise of profit from only talking. Of course, there are some endeavors where talking is coupled with work of the hands or mind, and that's profitable. This would include such things as preparing a lesson or a lecture after much study or research, or explaining a skill or technique which in turn produces accomplishments. But to occupy oneself in conversation only, and to neglect the work of the time and place you occupy, leads to poverty. This non-productive activity will not supply your physical needs. The same principle is true in our spiritual lives. Those who put effort into prayer and worship of God, who diligently study His Word, who walk in the way of righteousness, will have spiritual profit. But if the religion is only talking and hearing and not doing, this will be to no profit. James 1, 22-25, But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any man be a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass, for he beholdeth himself, and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. But whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty, and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. So let's read again, verse 23. In all labor there is profit, but the talk of the lips tendeth only to penury. NIV, all hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads to poverty. Verse 24, the next proverb. The crown of the wise is their riches, but the foolishness of fools is folly. NIV says the wealth of the wise is their crown, but the folly of fools yields folly. The word wise means intelligent, skillful, or artful. A person who is truly wise by the standards of the Bible will be the one who is following the commandments of God. When this person, one who fears God, has riches, the riches become a crown to him. The riches will be gotten honestly and used wisely. they will adorn this person in a good, positive, and pleasing way. There will be no taint of fraud, scandal, or sin connected with these riches. These riches will be used to do good and to promote the ways of God. Truly, the riches of the wise will be their crown. Wisdom is good without wealth, but it's better with it. But on the other hand, if persons are wicked and corrupt, their wealth will expose their true nature all the more. To see the entries in our checkbooks or our credit card record will to a large extent reveal our real priorities and our true characters. We spend money where our priorities are. A proverb says the foolishness of fools is folly. This means when fools have riches, their foolish ways will cause them to use riches in such a way that it will expose their foolishness all the more. Instead of a crown, their riches become a shame to them. Their riches become a means to do a more disservice to God. Their riches cause them to be more set in the ways of the ungodly. The way of riches are used actually becomes an open book to the world to know the true character of a person, and this will show him to be either wise or to be a fool. Look at the way he uses his wealth, and you can determine what kind of a character this person has. Wealth is not bad in the hands of the wise, but it is invariably bad in the hands of a fool. So verse 24 again says, the crown of the wise is their riches, but the foolishness of fools is folly. NIV, the wealth of the wise is their crown, but the folly of fools yields folly. We close our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.